It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 14th day of April 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round and whatever time you happen to be listening, if you're listening via the interweb, via the podcast, I should say. Hi, I'm Robin. I apologize for my absence yesterday, but it was a very good absence. We have closed out the speech therapy clinic season for this semester, and that means that I won't have any more speech therapy sessions until the summer term begins. So those Wednesdays... Those Wednesday interruptions are largely done. On the other hand, however, I will be, this will be another one of those short programs because I have my monthly meeting of the executive committee this evening, and I'm looking forward to that. And so I'll have to knock off a little bit before, I think, 7, well, probably around 6:30 or thereabouts. Tomorrow will be fine for Friday on the front porch. And then next week's schedule is looking, well, we take into account that normal is only a setting on a dryer. Next week looks reasonable. Not a lot of stuff in the way. So tonight will be a short program, but everything else is not too bad, not too bad. And today was not too bad. It was kind of gray and funky. Yesterday was sunny and pretty, and I had a lovely drive down to Huntington and back. And I guess they were flowering crab apples, were just in riotous bloom, and so are the red buds. I mentioned that. And I just lift my spirits. It makes me happy to see them. And God, those flowering crab apples. I think they were flowering crabs. But God, it was almost like incense, the beautiful aroma of those blossoms. So anyway, I did my thing. I came home, and today, of course, was shot day. So, you know, I get to get all glammed up to go and get my vitamin C injection. And I'm always kind of a little bit right before shot day. Then on shot day, I'm like, whoa. And then like by Saturday, I'll be as giddy as a gambling lamb in the field in spring. I did the Hi, I'm Robin part, right? Well, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we send out thanks to both our 13th and 14th day of the month subscribers via PayPal. So what that means is we say thank you here on the 13th to Ralphs, as well as to Matt in San Francisco. We're working backwards, 14th to the 13th. Thank you as well to Jude in the Great Northwest. Thank you, Paul, setting up a brand new subscription. Thank you to our anonymous friend. Thank you to Gary and Gaia in Oregon. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep independent, liberal, progressive media, broadcast media, radio, on the air for nearly two decades. It is a monumental accomplishment that y'all have done with the kindness of your gifts. So again, thank you. A couple of notes. It's been a while since we heard from Joey and Giraffe and Junior and Joey 2 the Kangaroo. Subject line, the list. Joey writes, sorry it's been a while for the journal, but Jeffrey's been back in Boston at Harvard doing his due diligence, mastering his erudite educational opportunity. At least that's what he tells us. I think he's spending entirely too much time with the co-eds, considering that cute, adorable fellow has charmed several young ladies into taking care of all of his homework, including writing all of his papers.
Well, yes, it is true. I have utilized my dashing personality to allure the local ladies into assisting me with my scholarly skills in preparing my papers. I feel no shame in doing so, because what the hell, if George Bush could do it at Yale and Princeton, why can't I as well allow the ladies to lead me? Besides, I have a hard time typing on the keyboard with these hooves.
That's true, and I bet it's even harder sending a text message on a phone. Yes, Jeffrey's referring to the fact that it is a well-known fact that W had much of his work done by fellow students because he never worked a day in his life. I trust Jeffrey is making more of an effort than the dolt George W. Bush ever did in any of his endeavors. We had a real moran this past moran Monday when the hee-haw meemaw, Governor K. Ivey of Talabama, aired a ridiculous propaganda-filled commercial riddled with fallacies about how the election was stolen from Trump. Of course, this commercial was made following Trump's ridiculing Mo Brooks, Les Brames, for no longer supporting Trump's bullshit. Also, Monday was the 77th anniversary of the liberation of Buchenwald, which freed many Jewish people in Germany. Oh, look, there's Junior. We helped liberate Buchenwald on this day 77 years ago. Now we need to liberate Bucha. Good point, Junior. Speaking of Nazis and morons, of course, we had Josh Hawley, who spewed his propaganda in Congress last week. On the other hand, speaking of the Jews, I would just like to congratulate and give much gratitude to a dynamic Jewish man from Ann Arbor, Michigan, by the name of Brian Schatz. Last week, as most of you may have heard, I played it here on this program, Schatz just totally took down Josh Hawley as he expertly exposed and excoriated Hawley for the hypocrite that Hawley is.
Well, Schatz's speech went viral, and millions saw and heard Schatz haul off on Hawley and expose this Nazi hypocrite for exactly what Hawley is, a traitor. By the way, the word Schatz in German means treasure. And Brian Schatz, you truly are a treasure, as you represent Hawaii and this country so very well, so there's something good that does come from Ann Arbor.
Oh, God, we're going to go to the OSU Ann Arbor stuff again. God damn it. We refer to Hawley as a Nazi because he uses the very same fist pump that Hitler used during his reign of terror. If you compare pictures of the two, Hawley looks identical to Hitler with that left-handed fist pump. Referring to the time period of the Holocaust, last Friday, Oskar Schindler's secretary, Mimi Reinhardt, died at 107 years young. Mimi Reinhardt actually recreated all of the original names on Schindler's list as she wrote out all 1,200 names by hand for the making of the film. Oh, look, here's Joey 2, the Kangaroo. Yes, Mimi Reinhardt was a great lady, and her boss, Oskar Schindler, had a big heart. H-A-R-D-T. A little humor up from up over down under. Oh, thank you, too, Joey 2. Jeffrey, with the finish. Yes, we had Schindler's list, and now we have another list. This list is from one of the greatest con men, criminals, and grifters of all time. The con man we refer to has cheated, stolen, and ripped off millions with his fraud and deception. Still many, such as K. Ivey, Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw, and Josh Hawley, want to remain on this man's list. Yes, people of this sort want to remain in Trump's good graces so they can be on the, wait for it, swindler's list. Oh, that's high quality. This has been Joey's Journal for Wednesday, the 13th day of April, with Giraffe watching some baseball this afternoon featuring Robin's Reds looking like a farm team against Joey's Cleveland baseball team. Jeffrey clarifies, yes, they may be a farm team because they have two players by the name of Farmer on the field today.
Wow.
Yeah, go Reds. And so there's a $25 Have a Heart, H-A-R-D-T, challenge on the table that would reduce our fundraising hole by some $50. If someone will but respond to it. By the way, I didn't mention the fundraising hole right now is $1,230, which is kind of brutal. But that would get us down to $1,180, which is, you know, medieval. But $1,180 is better than $1,230, so knocking that out would be just fantastic. And I also had brilliant correspondence, and I'm so grateful to her for it, from Lady B. Subject line, because of fucking course. Video shows police officer kneeling on black man before fatally shooting him. Grand Rapids, Michigan. The unidentified cop shot him in the back of the head, execution style. The victim was being held down on his stomach at the time. Why even report these stories? No matter how much we protest, campaign, complain, and sue, white cops afraid of their own shadow shoot black men like their target practice sheets. This is deeply embedded in their DNA. I mean, there's no other excuse. Cops like this need to be mentally screened before they're hired. Yet our police departments, sheriff's offices, and state patrols are teeming with them like roaches in a crack house. But where else are you going to find these Boy Scouts of truth and justice? Men and women who are brave enough to put themselves in danger but sociopathic enough to shoot first and ask questions later, especially, absolutely, and exclusively if they're black males. The average white man doesn't live in fear of their son being shot by police during a traffic stop. And if they say they do, they're fucking liars. They never have to have the talk when their son turns 12. Honest to God, it's bad enough. Native-born African-Americans still have to endure the residuals of slavery. And we also have to deal with this bullshit every single day. She's not wrong. On a lighter note, there's this. Wealthiest Americans pay just 3.4% of income taxes, and an investigation reveals that the rich pay less in taxes. Yeah, I'm just fucking with you, says Lady B. It's not funny. We'd rather have gangs roving the streets, robbing and stealing for food as society collapses all around us, rather than make those motherfuckers acknowledge their debt to society. They steal and keep billions, yet we lock up people who can't afford to pay a $250 traffic ticket. Because in America, it's easier to milk the poor to fill the city coffers than it is to just raise goddamn taxes on those who can afford to fucking pay it. Good God, Robin, is everyone in this country taking crazy pills? Is it an additive in our water? Why are we incapable of doing the right and economically smart thing? There's one of those potential nine-century conversations. Not ninth, but nine. It's a conversation that's been going on for a while, but Lady B, as far as I can tell, the best way I can explain this is If a government decides to be smart and raise taxes on our betters, then our betters will turn around and just give away money that they would have otherwise paid in taxes to politicians to fund a capitalist political campaign system to remove those people from government and put somebody in who will take the tax monkey off their little, mostly white backs. Lady B notes, they caught the subway shooter and turned himself in without incident. Kell surprise, really. Of course, black people's prayers for him not to be black went unanswered. And only God knows what set the brother off. But then again, what difference does it make? I wonder if they waited to beat his ass after the mugshot. Maybe they're waiting till after his first court appearance. Either way, despite no one dying, he'll be buried under the jail. They could and should have caught him sooner. You know, all us blacks look alike anyway, but thanks to the New York metro system being cheap as hell about cameras and white cops looking so hard to arrest black men who may have borne no resemblance to him, they did catch him. Actually, he called them, Lady B. Said, hi, this is Frank James, and gave him his location. Not a lot of sleuthing when the suspect tells you where he is. Already, Lady B notes, a lot of NYPD officers have dislocated shoulders from patting themselves on their backs, desperately trying to contort the arrest into a story about having done a shitload of legwork
even though the brother literally turned himself in. He's lucky they took him alive. In fact, it's downright miraculous. So here's your two interesting observations for the day. They actually do go hand in hand. If you really think about it, hopefully Jude can write more beautiful prose wishing for peace and serenity in the world. I'm just happy my irises are showing green leaves already. I got that going for me, which is nice. Signed, yours in Christ, on his holy pogo stick, Lady B. Thank you, Lady B. Thank you for the time you take putting those together and the time you take putting it in context and the thought that you give to it. Thank you so much. Oh, and thank you as well to Tim in Oakland. Thank you for jumping in on the Have a Heart Challenge. There's $15 remaining on that, and that'll get us down to $1,180 for a fundraising hole. Let's see, what would we have to do? From $1,180, we need to pick up $180. If we could raise $481 this evening, we wouldn't have a four-digit fundraising hole for Friday on the Front Porch, thus making the Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle a little... perhaps a little more achievable. Ron and Raleigh adds, addendum, just remember, there is no racism. If that Negro had just followed orders, he wouldn't have been shot in the back of the head while lying prone in the streets in Grand Rapids. Can you say Fruitvale Station? Yeah, unfortunately. Unfortunately. So the story in question came from The Guardian. Patrick Leoya, age 26, was killed in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He was engaged in a struggle after a traffic stop. There was a traffic stop, an alleged foot chase, a fight over a stun gun. It all happened on the fourth day of April 2022. Patrick Leoya was a Congolese refugee. And he was blown away in a residential neighborhood somewhere in Grand Rapids. And the person who was riding with Patrick Leoya got out of the car and began filming, videoing. The police chief, Eric Winstrom, put out four videos. Among those four videos, there was the video from the passenger in the car. Police Chief Eric Winstrom said, "I view it as a tragedy." He became police chief of Grand Rapids just last month after a long career on, well, you know, the Chicago PD. Chicago. Because they've got such a great record with African-American males. And they won't, they will not identify the cop who blew the young man away. A Congolese refugee. How sad it is to think he might have been better off had he never come to the United States of America. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever in the universe, under God, amen. The Leoya family has already hired civil rights lawyer Benjamin Crump. Protesters have been marching through Grand Rapids calling for justice. With one activist, Nikita Miner, telling Michigan Public Radio, "We activists have been trying to tell you that Grand Rapids is no different from Ferguson, Missouri, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Detroit, Michigan, or Chicago. Police have too much power, and it's extrajudicial, and it's illegitimate." Patrick Leoya leaves behind him two little girls and five siblings. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer said, he arrived in the United States as a refugee with his family fleeing violence. He had his whole life ahead of him. He got out of the car when he was stopped. The cop told him to get back in his car. He didn't. The white officer said, let go of his taser, drop the taser. And then they fought over the taser. The taser never made contact, according to the police chief. And this Orwellian language always crawls all over me like poison ivy. The police chief said, and Mr. Leoya was shot in the head. However, that's the only information that I have. I know Steve from New York has a hissy every time he hears the passive voice, and in many instances, so do I. He was shot in the head. This, of course, begs for a prepositional phrase that begins with the preposition by. Yeah, the cop was shot in the head. You know, the gun just went off. Chief Winstrom said, me being from Chicago for the last 20 years, I've handled many police shootings myself, so I do have a lot of experience in this. I was hoping to never have to utilize that experience here. You know, it's hard not to contrast this with the maggot in Lancaster, PA. From what, last week? White guy, of course. And he ran from the cops. And the white cop chased him down, struggled with him on the ground. Even though the maggot said, let's have some blood, or something like that, before he ran. Chased him, knocked him down, struggled with him on the ground, rolled him over onto his face, and managed to get the cuffs on him without putting a gun to the back of his head and blowing him away. What's the difference? Is it the difference between how cops are trained in Grand Rapids versus how cops are trained in Lancaster, PA? Is it an element of that training? I don't know. Whatever could be the difference. And, of course, they're running toxicology on the shooting victim so that if he had so much as a picogram of THC in his body, that it will be publicly made available, and suddenly his body, Patrick Leoka's body chemistry will be more important as to the cause of his death than the bullet that went through his brain emanating from the muzzle of a pistol wielded by a pants-wetting, scared cop. And, of course, there's a history of excessive use of force by the cops in Grand Rapids against... people of color. The ultimate and hateful irony is that while she was murdered in her bed in Louisville, Kentucky, Breonna Taylor was originally from, how about that? Grand Rapids. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you to Kevin and Tracy. We are done with the Have a Heart Challenge, so and then some. So we're now down to 11:75. Thank you. Thank you so much. Ron and Raleigh adding, you are aware Michigan had and has several sundown cities. The racism is strong in that state. Dearborn, home of Henry Ford, Nazi sympathizer, was one of those sundown cities. Yeah. The Mason-Dixon line is no line of demarcation between racism
and non-racism in the United States of America. It may fairly be said that it is probably as prevalent in the North and in the West as it is in the South. The South somehow, you know, because of treason in, say, 162 years ago, gets more notice. But racism in Chicago, racism in Dearborn, racism in Grand Rapids, racism in Detroit, racism in Boston, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Cleveland. It's all there. It's all there. Well, let's go a little further abroad, shall we? The spokesman for the defense ministry of Mother Russia has made rather a shocking admission, kinda, sorta, maybe. They claim that their flagship in the Black Sea, I'm not sure, I think it's probably some sort of frigate. It was called the Moscow, or Moskva. And Mother Russia's foreign ministry said that somehow or another, there was a fire aboard the ship in stormy seas, and that the flagship, sorry, I didn't mean to chuckle, but it sank. The pride of the Russian fleet sank. Now, the punchline to all of this is that Ukraine claimed, if it sank in stormy seas, it was a storm of cruise missiles. That's how they took out the ship, and that's got. And what's his name? Admiral, is it John Stavridis? Was on, I think, MSNBC, maybe. And he said, you know, when you go to your first year, your plebe year at the United States Naval Academy, they tell you a basic rule the first year. And that basic rule is never get your flagship sunk. And I think he was smirking a little when he said it. But it's basically, the ship was basically a missile platform that had been used to, you know, indiscriminately murder men, women, children, civilians. And so, hopefully, well, I don't know. I don't know. You reckon anybody has the nerve to tell Putin that his flagship is at the bottom of the Black Sea? I would not want to be the one who did that. They said it was sunk while being towed to port for repairs. It was sunk off of the Black Sea near Odessa. The translation of the defense ministry statement said, Moskva cruiser lost stability when it was towed to the port of destination due to damage to hull received during fire from detonation of ammunition. Ship sank in stormy sea. Well, you know, when a cruise missile hits your goddamn cruiser, the ammunition might just blow up. Oops. Ship go boom.
Ship sink in sea. Sighted ship sank same. Good for the Ukrainians. They needed some good news, and this will be a huge morale boost. And they did it themselves. The Turks didn't do it. The Americans didn't do it. Ukrainians did it. Well, something else will have to be the flagship now. And maybe it can join its sister at the bottom of said sea. Oh, and speaking of Mother Russia, interesting story. The DOJ, Merrick Garland's DOJ, unsealed an indictment today that accuses three Russians for, quote, conspiring to use an agent of Russia in the United States without prior notice to the Attorney General, conspiring to violate U.S. sanctions, and conspiring to commit visa fraud. Three proud citizens of Mother Russia are Alexander Mikhailovich Babakov, age 59, Alexander Nikolaevich Vrobev, age 52, and Mikhail Alexeyevich Plisiuk, age 58. Now, the fun part of this is that they were busted for planning to buy off a member of the Congress of the United States for an all-expenses-paid junket. And Alexander Babakov is a member of the Russian Duma. The other two are members of his staff. Quoting from the statement, among other things, the defendants contacted members of the U.S. Congress from 2012 into 2017 to seek meetings and to offer free travel to at least one Congress member on behalf of Babakov, as well as other foreign officials aligned and associated with Babakov. For example, in 2012, at the direction of the defendants, CC1 sought to secure a meeting for Babakov with multiple members of Congress, including by offering an all-expenses-paid trip to a particular Congress member to meet with European politicians and receive an award. Apparently, the Congress members said, no, thank you. And then in 5 years later, in March 2017, Nitwit Nero would have been in office for a couple of months. The three Russians contacted at least one member of the United States Congress to offer free travel to a conference in Yalta that Babakov was affiliated with. Yalta, of course, being in the Russian-occupied Crimea. And it was to, prop up the so-called Prime Minister of Crimea, one Sergei Aksyonov. Now, maybe I'm going out on a limb here. You tell me. But doesn't this sound rather a lot like it was maybe a Republican? Remember all those Republican senators who went to celebrate the 4th of July in Moscow, Mitch? First thing popped into my mind. Rubles, rubles. Sweet, sweet rubles. I mean, 9 racket, right? Good work if you can get it. Yeah. But while we're talking Russians, let's go down to Tenistan, where there's a maggot there, diehard worshiper of his god emperor, his orange god emperor, by the name of State Senator Frank Nicely, ironically named, declaring his undying devotion to his god emperor. Lately, he said, I'd vote for Donald Trump as long as he lives. But that reminds me of something I was thinking earlier today, either going to or coming from Shot Day. You know, Trump's end, by means merely natural, will come sooner rather than later in the grand scheme of things. He has already well exceeded the 70 of biblical fame. But here's the problem, and I know it's going to be a problem by analogy. Everybody was pretty well aware that old 666 himself, that greasy-headed B-movie actor Ronald Wilson Reagan, was, he was dotty as a polka dot dress by the time he left his second term in office. Hey, well, Mommy, hey, ketchup is a vegetable. And then later on, so was he. Sorry, that was mean. But even after they had got him in the dirt, Republicans were still vying with each other to prove which one of them had the most undying devotion to old 666. Who, by the way, and I don't think it's a secret, would not be welcome in today's Republican Party. Probably be referred to as a rhino. Republican in name only. Well, I was thinking about that today when I realized, I know what it was that triggered the thought. It was a story I heard on the radio talking about Nitwit Nero rescinding his endorsement of Mo Brooks, Les Brames. And the fact that he rescinded the endorsement because Mo Brooks was not sufficiently MAGA. What Mo Brooks wasn't sufficiently was sufficiently likely to win the Republican primary. And then went on to the story went on to talk about, I think it was Fresh Air on NPR. The journalist went on to talk about the Pennsylvania race, where there were two well-off Republicans vying for the nomination. One of them is, of course, that huckster and charlatan, Dr. Mehmet Oz. We talked, I think it was Tuesday, about the fact that wingnuts, MAGA wingnuts, went apeshit bananas over Nitwit Nero endorsing Dr. Oz because, well, Dr. Oz, not sufficiently MAGA, which is to say not sufficiently white or Christian. Not that I'm taking up for Dr. Oz, no. But nonetheless, both of the main Republican candidates for that Senate seat in Pennsylvania are turned on a dime and declared their undying devotion to Nitwit Nero. And the thought that entered my head, like I said, I thought about how they kept flogging the greasy, tired old corpse of old 666 long after he was gone to his reward. How are the pineapples, Ron? The same will happen if anybody's out there thinking, you know, this has to end sometime. Well, The cult of MAGA does not need a living leader for it to remain a cult. And history is littered with proof of the fact. So don't be thinking MAGA is going to disappear anytime soon. It's not. But anyway, back to State Senator Frank Nicely. It's almost predictable. During a Tennessee Senate meeting or hearing about a bill about unauthorized camping on public property, you know, just another way to shit on unhoused people, of course, because Republican. He decided to unlimber himself of his misunderstanding of history and began uttering, grunting, whatever, some real gems.
Speaker, I haven't given you all a history lesson in a while, and I want to give you a little history on homelessness. 1910, Hitler decided to live on the streets.
Jesus. Noun and verb and Adolf Hitler. Ah! 19, and you know, he sounds like he was there. 1910, Adolf Hitler decided to live on the streets. And of course, that's what's going to happen here if we let these people unauthorizedly camp in public properties. And one of them's Hitler. We're going to be a Hitler. Not a kind man like me, your Senator Nicely. And by the way, and I know where this place is, and it sounds like such a charming place, but no, he is the senator from District 8. In Tennessee, which encompasses a place called Strawberry Plains. Strawberry Plains forever. That was kind of saw that one coming, didn't we? Yeah. Sorry about the singing. We've got $11.75 to go to fill the fundraising hole, so please don't hold that against me. Yeah, Hitler decided to live on the streets in 1910. That's why we can't have unauthorized camping.
Listen, in a while, and I want to give you a little history on homelessness. 1910, Hitler decided to live on the streets for a while. So for 2 years, Hitler lived on the streets and practiced his oratory and his body language and how to connect with races, and then went on to lead a life that got him in the history books. So a lot of these people, it's not a dead end. They can come out of these homeless camps and have a productive life.
Hold on! Hold the hell on! Kind of skipped over the whole First World War, beer hall putsch, writing Mein Kampf in prison, vicious, bloodthirsty hatred of Jews, gays, trans people, gypsies, people with disabilities, and draws the conclusion that you can have a meaningful life if you quit being homeless. You know, like Hitler. Poor God, Billy Bob. They can't help themselves, can they? Yeah, that Adolf Hitler, he pulled himself up by his bootstraps and got out of his homelessness. They're on the main streets of Vienna, Austria. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Not a dead end. They can come out of these homeless camps.
Yeah, you can come out of these homeless camps, and it's not a dead end, and you can go on and found some camps of your own at places like Buchenwald. Bergen-Belsen, Sobibor, Auschwitz,
camps, you know, camps.
And have a productive life, or in Hitler's case, a very unproductive life. I support this bill. Thank you.
Yeah, oh, I love the after. In Hitler's case, an unproductive life.
One wonders if Senator Nicely considers his life to have been productive. What do you think? No, Flavio. I don't think he said homeless skanks, but now you've made me listen to it again. Blame Flavio, y'all. It's his fault. Bored.
Speaker, I haven't given you all a history lesson in a while, and I want to give you a little history on homelessness. 1910, Hitler decided to live on the streets for a while. So for 2 years, Hitler lived on the streets and practiced his oratory and his body language and how to connect with his, and then went on to lead a life that got him in the history books. So a lot of these people, it's not a dead end. They can come out of these homeless camps and have a productive life, or in Hitler's case, a very unproductive life. I support this bill. Thank you.
And so does Hitler.
Jesus. Well, you know, this is what happens when you let ignorance run unchecked, unabated. Remember that rule in the NFL, unabated to the quarterback? You know, this is unabated to the MAGA.
Now I will support Donald Trump as long as he remains alive.
Yeah.
And by the way, Strawberry Fields, Lee in New York, reminds us. The title of the song refers to the Salvation Army-run girls' orphanage dreamily called Strawberry Field that John Lennon lived near growing up in Liverpool. Homeless orphanage? Lee says we take such good care of each other. Chose to be homeless? Who chooses it? I'm glad you made that skate safe, Lee, because that's how Republicans, maggots, view people who are unhoused. Never mind the fact that trying to just find a place to live is hard enough, or that the fact that rents have gone through the roof. You know, a cardboard refrigerator box in some parts of this country probably rents for about $1,000 a month. Now, choice and homelessness do belong in a sentence together. It's not that people who are unhoused choose to be unhoused. It is that we as a nation choose to let homelessness exist in our country. Flavio says, okay, camps, all better now.
Never mind.
Emily Letella. Productive? I think I've gotten under Matt in San Francisco's skin pretty early. The world would have been better off if Hitler would have been a lot less productive. Tennessee, not a good look. Senator Nicely, here's an alphabet book. Learn to read the room. Mercy. And by the way, just a little reminder, the Environmental Film Festival out in the Bay Area takes place this weekend, and I think at the Roxy Theater. I would love to see Devil Put the Coal in the Ground on the big screen. I watched it on the little bitty screen of my iPad, but pass the word. And by the way, through that Environmental Film Festival, there is a Watch the Movie link. I shared it from the Devil Put the Coal in the Ground page on Facebook. It's on my Facebook page if you scroll down. And I don't know, I think it's a $10 donation if you want to watch it. But I do continue in my, let's see, what's the language? Firmly held conviction that it will be the most powerful documentary you see this year and maybe have seen in years. And by the way, the bill that Senator Nicely so hilariously supported. Ooh, neologism. Yay me. Hilariously. Well, the bill in question passed the Tennistan House. And the purpose of the bill was to broaden, to expand the ability of the state of Tennistan to punish people for being homeless. And it went from being unauthorized camping on state-owned property to unauthorized camping on all public property. So basically the cops can go in and roust people who are already suffering under the lash of the love of Republicans. God. So let's stay in the same vein, sort of kind of. How about Jacob Lewis? Jacob Lewis is 38 years old. Jacob Lewis is from Victorville, California. And he went in for sentencing today. Well, before we get to that part, back when Governor Gavin Newsom shut down California over the coronavirus because it was killing, you know, killing almost indiscriminately, but not quite. Well, back in 2020, Jacob Lewis of Victorville owned a gym. And he flouted the shutdown order saying that he was going to reopen his big old huge gym and turn it into a super spreader center. The Washington Post said, when Lewis reopened his large gym, which has a 500-person capacity, he did not require customers to wear masks while working out. At the reopening on May 1, 2020, he raised an American flag and set up a cardboard cutout of the Constitution for customers to pose next to for pictures. MAGA, y'all. Is Victorville in a particularly maggoty place, or was this just an asshole? He said, I'm big on the Constitution. So if you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you don't, don't. Interviewed by Reuters, Jacob Lewis said, well, I'm reopening my gym to support my customers' mental health and freedom. And, of course, his bank account. But that's not why we're talking about Jacob Lewis. No. We're talking about Jacob Lewis, age 38, of Victorville, because he went into federal court today to be sentenced for his role participating in the insurrection against constitutional governance of January 6, 2021, in which he joined, about 1,500, I think, other people, maybe more, in rampaging through the Capitol, where some maggots shit on the floor, played finger paint with it on the walls, right? Stole things, smashed things. Well, he went into court today, and having entered a guilty plea, and the plea was to misdemeanor parading. Attorney General Merrick Garland's Justice Department allowed that misdemeanor plea to parading. Yeah, I guess because maybe they were afraid to try it. Well, after January 6th, the FBI got a tip from someone who said they were a friend of Jacob Lewis's, who reported to the FBI that back in December of 2020, okay, the election is over,
in November. But in December of 2020, Lewis told his buddy, watch what happens to the Capitol on the 6th. So we know that the insurrection was already well into the planning stages by December, you know. Hell, it was probably in the planning stages before Election Day in November. Watch what happens on January 6th. When the FBI interviewed him, he said, well, I was never told that I could not enter. And I was escorted by the police into the building. I didn't do any violence while I was in the building. And you know what? The people that did the violence, you know what? They's probably Antifa. In disguise. You know, anybody can buy a maggot hat. The FBI did note that in reviewing the footage, at no point in time was he escorted by any police anywhere. But, you know, let's not charge him with lying to the FBI. Well, by God, don't you... he learned his lesson. Because, by God, he went into court today. And the court said, Mr. Lewis, you stand here today convicted of parading in the United States Capitol on January the 6th, 2021. Hold out your hands. And proceeded to slap him ever so lightly on the wrist. Yeah, it's another one of those stories. By God, he's going to do 24 months of probation that will probably be unsupervised. He's going to have to do 60 hours, 60 long, hard, brutal hours of community service. He's going to pay a $3,000 fine, and he's going to pay $500 in restitution for having participated in an insurrection against constitutional governance in the United States of America. Oh, hell. This is where I say it again. I get tired of saying it again. Y'all, they're going to do it again. They are going to do it again. I mean, he'll probably pay those fines and restitution in monthly increments of $10. And here's a question, and it's not sarcasm; it's sincerely asked. If you were a probation officer, what kind of community service would you assign to a guy who participated in an insurrection against constitutional governance in the United States of America? No, really. Yeah, you want him, how about Big Brothers? You want him to be some parentless kid's big brother? I don't think so. You want him picking up trash in the city park in Victorville? I don't think I'd trust a maggot to even do that. Probably shit in the garbage can or something. I mean, if we were lucky. Yeah, maybe he could cut the grass at the domestic violence shelter. No, I'm guessing that won't work either. How about working at a soup kitchen? You know, where he could spread his insurrectionist gospel and probably have, you know, one or two people at least take him seriously. God, this is nauseating. Why bother prosecuting him? I mean, hell, since it's just a misdemeanor conviction, he doesn't even lose the right to keeping armed bears. Y'all, they're gonna do it again. And I hate that. Hey, thank you, Flavio. Thank you so much. Flavio just got us down to 11:55. And Clarence just got us down to 11:30. Thank you, Clarence, and thank you, Flavio. So, let's see, Ernie. $431, and we won't have a four-digit fundraising goal tomorrow. Parole officer Lee in New York says, a friend of mine is a parole officer. He does not assign the work. He only monitors that the rules of parole are followed. I don't know if the rules are the same for parole officers or and probation officers alike. Maybe they're the same critters. I'm curious here. Could he get a gig? Volunteering for the Oath Keepers or the Proud Boys or the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff for 60 hours. God, that would almost be like rewarding him for attacking the Capitol of the United States on January 6th. God love you, Matt, in San Francisco, for your or Flying Spaghetti Monster or nothing, you know, for your creativity. Matt says probation. I'd have him clean the peep stalls at the local adult bookstore. Oh, my. Then again, might enjoy it. Lord God. So anyway, we got about 30 minutes or so left in the program. If anybody would like to get some conversation going this evening, both lines are open, the stress line and the Skype line. Stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. And it gets both of them get you into the same place, namely this live program. Probation and parole, Jeremy in Vermont says, same critters, different outcomes in sentences, basically. Yeah, one's post-conviction, and the other is post-imprisonment. Probation is for people who aren't going to jail, and parole is for people who have already been sent and turned loose. Well, either way. Jacob Lewis is getting a big old pass. Oh, back to Pennsylvania for a moment. This is some good news for our side. At least I think it is. The Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, has opened a whopping lead over Connor Lamb in the Democratic primary there. The Democratic primary there is scheduled for May the 17th. He's got a lead of 41% of the vote to 17% for Connor Lamb. 37% of those surveyed said they were either undecided or favored somebody else. State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, another Democrat, is pulling up about 4%. This is Fetterman's fundraising has been phenomenal. He's raised about over $15 million since he started his campaign last year, and they've still got $4.1 million in the bank for the stretch run into May 17th in the primary. I don't know why Connor Lamb got into it. And I think John Fetterman is the better, stronger candidate. And look, we have a number of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Pennsylvania, not least among them our dear friend Arnold. And if I'm wrong in my assessment between the two, I will happily admit it, but it seems to me there's a lot to like in John Fetterman. And I think he's straightforward enough and tough enough
to spit in the eye of Dr. Oz and make him take it. Because Fetterman is a fighter. Now, they asked more questions in that that poll. There were there were questions about the direction of the country, whatever that means. And of those polled, only 38% of voters think that the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania is doing an excellent or a good job. 34% said he was doing a poor job. Look at that 34% number. Only 29% of Pennsylvanians say that the country is headed in the right direction. This is part of... Whoa, what the f*** was that? This is why I hate polling. That was almost a carnival noise, wasn't it? Because when people say, for instance, is the country headed in the right direction, and it's a yes or no question, I mean, I could sit here, if I were polled, and say, no, we are not headed in the right direction. Because I don't think we are. Because I don't think a country that lets insurrectionists walk after attacking the seat of constitutional governance is headed in the right direction. You can't, however, blame that on the governor of Pennsylvania or the president of the United States, but you just try telling that to the members of the multimillionaire for-profit media. Good luck. Yeah, going back to Jacob Lewis there of Victorville, California. Kevin in Massachusetts says, they don't want to be a part of the community, so why have them do community service? Hard time. Only thing that'll work. Kevin continues and says, I can see a Republican-led GOP House defanging the Justice Department January 2nd, 2023. The hourglass has been turned over by Kevin McCarthy, but of course, on January 2nd, Donald Trump will push him out of the way. I hope I'm wrong. But I'm sure Merrick Garland knows he's got roughly 8 months and change to do something. Let's hope so. I'm really hoping our side wakes up. We have to vote in 2022 like it's life or death. And the message has to get out. Because it is life or death. Vote like your life depends on it, but only because it does. We hammer that and hammer that and hammer that and hope that by some freaking miracle, the message gets all the way home. Well, let's run over to the stress line, check in, see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin.
Well, hey, Dave.
You know, I've been thinking since earlier this week, when you were talking about Putin developing Russia developing hypersonic missiles that can't be seen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have three little letters that might remind you of what's actually going on. SDI. Putin ripped
Star
off
Wars?
Ronald Reagan. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I mean, SDI was a bogus program that wasn't going to work. And it made the Soviets spend constantly. So... the goddess of irony is probably tweaking the West pink tomato nose, and nobody's looking at it from the point of view of, well, if you can't see them, how do you know they're there? So fire them, lad. maybe your people told you they exist and they don't really exist. That would be another very Russian thing. I think it's a deception.
It is so easy to go down the rabbit hole on all of this.
Yeah, but here's the reason I say that. This weekend, Vladimir evidently made a public statement that if there wasn't an offer acceptable to the Kremlin, and I believe I'm quoting him here, the war would continue unabated. Now, that means that Vladimir should be arrested because he broke Russian law. He referred to the war as a war instead of as a special military operation.
Yeah, but you also have to take into account, who's translating.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But also I've heard that publishing in Russia is changed. A classic Russian novel has had to change its name to Special Military Operation and Peace.
Okay, that's quality. That's very nice.
Because you can't say war.
No, and I do have a story here that where'd it go? Over in Mother Russia, they've opened an investigation against a journalist from literally Siberia. And they the outfit published a piece that was critical of the aforementioned special military operation. The chief editor of something called Novi Focus, one Mikhail Afanasyev, was arrested by so-called security forces yesterday because they'd written a story about 11 riot police who refused deployment to Ukraine, basically refuseniks. And they charged him with disseminating deliberately false information about the Russian armed forces. And under the law they passed last month, Dave, he can do up to 10 years in some filthy Russian prison, which for all intents and purposes could easily be a life sentence because he may never see the outside, no matter what his age is.
Well, they might also find him a little private cell where the guard escorts him in and he's told not to turn around while they plug him in the back of the head.
Right. And they also arrested another journalist in Siberia, one Sergei Mikhailov. He runs something called Listok Weekly Newspaper in the Republic of Altay. He published a piece calling for sanctions against Mother Russia. Back in March, they blocked the website for that publication because it was promoting activities opposing Mother Russia's actions in Ukraine. So there's a reason outfits like the BBC pulled the hell out.
Oh, sure. I believe the New York Times also pulled its bureau out. I don't know if CNN has pulled its bureau out of Moscow. They should. Um, you know, it's gonna get to the point where only Onan and Trump TV are broadcasting from Russia.
Well, and of course, Russian TV rerunning clips of Tucky O'Rose.
I still love that name.
Oh, I do too. That one stuck.
I mean, so who does Tucky O'Rose interview? Does he interview Lady G and Donald Trump and all the other right-wing luminaries? I mean, this is nuts. I mean, what it tells me is that Russia is getting nervous. When you start arresting journalists, that means your government's getting nervous. And remember what I told you about a month ago. Wait until about day 45 of this whole thing, and you're going to start seeing Russia start to flounder even harder. That ship, the Moscow, from what I understand, that is supposed to be a float vessel.
Well, it's supposed to be state of the art. It's the pride and joy of the Black. It's the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet.
Yeah, it's supposed to carry like a crew of up to 500.
Yeah, it's a cruise. I was wrong. It's not a frigate. It's a cruiser. It's the next step down from a full on dreadnought battleship.
And it is the technological gem of the Russian Navy. I saw a video about this missile. It is a huge motherfucker.
And yet, on the way down, it went floop.
Well, you know, and at some point, you've got to figure that all this loss of equipment, the tanks, the ships, the amount of crematorium fuel that has to go into this little special military operation is going to start draining away the government funds, and since Vladimir has commingled his funds with the government's funds, well, it might end up costing dear old Vladdy Daddy a couple of bucks. We can only hope. But at some point, there's not going to be a come to Jesus moment in the Russian government. That's not the way regime change works over there. Mikhail Gorbachev is actually very fortunate that he survived the coup attempt that he survived. Because if they had been smart, they would have killed him. I think we're giving the Russian military too much credit. Back in the 80s and during the Cold War, yeah, you could talk trash about the Russians, but generally among the professional military people, they saw their Soviet counterparts as pros. There were certain things that they could expect that they would not do, or that they would do. Now all bets are off. There isn't the kind of discipline that there was, let's say, when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. a brilliant move, I might add. There's a reason Afghanistan's called the Graveyard of Empire. I mean,
yeah.
What we're
learning out of about the modern Russian military is that they cannot succeed without committing war crimes. And they got away with it in Chechnya. They got away with it in Georgia. They got away with it in Syria. And they're hoping to get away with it here. And frankly, I'm going to be disgusted if they do. And I know the Pentagon recently said, listen, this may go on for years. And I suppose you have to say those sort of things. But the goal here should be to make it not go on for years. Doesn't that seem sensible?
That's sensible, but you got to wonder how many of them are waiting for the return of God on Earth to the Oval Office, where he can then order his Secretary of State to sign another surrender instrument.
Well, it would be nice if we could figure out a way to just drive them out of Donetsk and Luhansk. And by the way, everywhere else in Ukraine, including Crimea. But I don't know. They've had since 2014 to harden their defenses in Crimea. So that just may not be possible.
But how many years were they in Afghanistan? I know it was over 5.
Oh, yeah.
If
you take in the entirety of the Reagan administration, that's 8 years.
And they didn't get out until, I think, the tail end of the Bush administration.
Well, wasn't it the 1980 Moscow Olympics that Jimmy Carter boycotted because they invaded Afghanistan?
Yeah. It was. And I saw an Antiques Roadshow where somebody had a coat that was issued to the American athletes that were supposed to appear at the Moscow Games. And since they didn't go, that became a real collector's item, because they were never used for the purpose they were intended. This was supposed to be for the Parade of Nations, the opening ceremonies. And they were given to the athletes, but they were never used because the team never went to Russia.
Right, yeah. By the way, Matt in San Francisco tells us Russia was in Afghanistan for 9 years. We were there for 18.
9 years.
Twice as long to learn the same lesson. Maybe that's why Russians are better chess players.
Yeah, but you gotta wonder... I know that Afghanistan, for a lot of Russian veterans, right after they pulled out, was devastating. I mean, you had psychological problems like you saw with returning Vietnam veterans. As a matter of fact, when things warmed up after the fall of the Soviet Union, several Vietnam veterans went over to Russia and they began talking to their Red Army counterparts. And they noticed that they were going through the same kinds of things. They were greatly disillusioned by the war in Afghanistan. I'm beginning to wonder how much competency there is left in it. I mean, if you're just doing a smash and grab, which is what this sounds like, you don't send your best troops. So,
well, you remember Donald Rumsfeld? Remember what he said? You don't go to war with the army you want, you go to war with the army you have. Well, what we're seeing in Ukraine is, no, I disagree with you. It's the best they got. Now, I saw a video the other day, interesting, of and you know, it had a propagandistic flavor to it. It was a bunch of people in Syria waving Russian flags and waving bye-bye to Russian troops that were leaving Syria to go and fight in Ukraine.
Well, I'm sure al-Assad is just so happy.
Well, but what does that tell you about their capabilities? If they're, or is it because they're drawing people, soldiers, Russian soldiers from Syria, because they're experienced, battle hardened, and numb to the notion of committing war crimes and atrocities?
Putin just appointed the general that was in charge of the Syrian operation,
and the idea I got from it is that he is taking his boys with him.
Yep. Oh, this ain't over by a long shot. We could be talking about this 10 years from now easily.
I hope not.
And the unfortunate thing is the maggots will get back into office before that happens. Because our side just can't stay on message, and they throw up so much bullshit on the other side, you just get tired. You just turn it off. It's not anything that Biden's not doing. I mean, they're putting out shit that the inflation rate is because of Biden when it's a worldwide inflationary environment.
And anybody who blames it on Biden either is either hopelessly ignorant of economic forces or deliberately misleading people. You know, I'm sorry to keep coming back to such fine-grained little micro things, but questions arise from simple things like an idiot getting taken down in Lancaster, PA, putting those stickers, and I have seen them with my own eyes in West Virginia. It's a picture of Joe Biden pointing, and underneath it, it says, "I did this," and the finger points at the price of gasoline.
Well, I think the
question I want to ask, Dave, is how does that happen? Who drives the process of creating that, for lack of a better term, viral behavior?
There's a whole network of people, Robin. You know this. The Kochs have been funding this shit for decades.
But, I mean, stickers? Stickers?
Yes, because it grabs attention. Just like the Tea Party, or as I like to refer to them, the Z Party, the last party you'll ever have, you know, I'm sure that when the Koch brothers cooked this one up, they just went all out and said, well, how can we do it so they can't criticize us on the other side? Because initially, that was their big deal. Well, this was a spontaneous movement. When all of their money was coming from these dark money organizations, you know, Citizens for Prosperity, which actually works for the opposite, neither the citizens nor prosperity.
Okay. Since we're kind of talking about that sort of thing, you'll get a kick out of this, Dave. I recently got notice from the post office that that I had received correspondence from West Virginia Right to Work. Now, this is no surprise, because I've gotten all kinds of candidate surveys. Some I've answered, some I've made fun of here on the air.
Right.
Well, this came from West Virginia Right to Work, and they sent it to me certified, requiring my signature of acceptance. Now, okay, that just seems facially kind of overdoing it, but it tells you what kind of money these outfits have.
They're trying to use intimidation.
Oh, fuck them!
Because most
Dave, this is not about intimidation. This is about look. It costs what, 50 something cents. I've got forever stamps, so I haven't bought stamps in a very long time, but it costs 50 plus cents to buy a single stamp.
Yeah,
it costs probably near 10 times that to send a letter, certified mail return receipt requested.
I think it's more like $5.
Well, that would be near ten times more,
yeah,
than a stamp.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So they've got it, and there are, God only knows how many candidates running for House and Senate this year. So you have to take that letter that they send certified return receipt requested times every candidate running for office in the House and Senate in this state. And the next thing you know, you're talking about some actual walking around money. And it's nothing to them.
Yeah.
Because when you're West Virginia Right to Work, you can light your cigars with sopping wet $100 bills. Because that spigot is never going to dry up.
Well, it's probably being printed out of the bomb shelter at the Greenbrier.
Well, I'm thinking it's being printed out of the National Right to Work for Less, Right to Starve organization, because, and this is the important part, they really do have that kind of money, and they will always have that kind of money. And that's why we get our asses beaten. By the way,
This is why
we need campaign finance reform. By the way, because they qualify under the tax code as it's probably 501c4. I mean, they probably got a 501c3, and then they got a 501c4, and they're a 501c3 as an educational organization.
Yeah, unfortunately, most of them can't read.
That don't matter.
And the ones that do.
But by the way, Ron and Raleigh, going back to inflation, Ron and Raleigh says, au contraire, Charlie Kirk said that all this inflation is being caused by trans people. I have no doubt that he did. And provides sources. That's the important part.
Charlie Kirk needs to unbunch his panties and get a life. I mean, it's nothing but a grievance committee in overdrive. You know, they're the good, God-fearing citizens of Red Rock. And they don't want... And they don't like something. So that's what you're dealing with. And you thought Mel Brooks was only kidding in the 1970s. Nope. They somebody asked him if he thought he could make Blazing Saddles now, and he said, absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I do have to wrap up. I do have to wrap up, Dave, because I've got to get out of here this evening because I've got a meeting coming up. But it's,
all right,
it's been great talking to you. By the way, I wanted to mention something to you. This is unpaid product placement. You know, they're probably owned by a bunch of right wingers, but my favorite company for tomato products in the United States, right there in Taleb, Indiana.
Red Gold?
Red Gold.
Oh, yeah, they're quality.
I love their tomato juice so much.
You should try their canned tomatoes.
Well, the tomato juice is fabulous because it is not from concentrate.
Ooh, I didn't know that. But I know they're stewed tomatoes.
Oh.
I use that in my chili.
Yeah, those are fantastic. Well, you know, I use their stewed tomatoes for one of my favorite country comfort foods ever. And that's Ron will probably tell me to take them out and throw them the same place I put the spinach. But creamed stewed tomatoes. You ever made them?
I've never had that.
Oh, it's heaven.
Never had that.
You open a can of stewed tomatoes, and you sweeten it to your liking.
Uh-huh.
And then you bring it to roughly a boil. And you add to it ice, really, not kidding, ice cold milk in which you have dissolved and stirred up till there's no lumps, either cornstarch or just plain flour. And you pour that slurry in, lower the heat, stir like crazy so it won't stick, and it thickens up and it gets creamy and wonderful, and you put it over fresh, hot, homemade biscuits right out of the oven. And people will cry. Ooh. It is
Robin. Robin, we can do food porn next week when I call in. You need to get going, girl.
I do. Dave, take care of yourself.
All right. Bye.
See ya. Bye. And really, I do have to knock off because I've got this meeting coming. But I want to end with a couple of notes. Jude said, I'm finding myself in the process of responding to Lady B's heartfelt request. The subject line that typed itself out is walking on the edge. I have no idea where it'll lead, but I can sense it ruminated in me. A subtle, finally revealing, churning, warmly sent, signed, Jude. And we will give the last word to Lady B herself, going back to the Senator Nicely from Tennessee. From Strawberry Plains, that crazy representative. Dudette, why would anybody even bring Hitler up? What in God's name would possess anybody to compare the plight of the homeless to that of a homicidal maniac? Really? Who the fuck talks that way? Is that considered cocktail party chatter in Tennessee? Jesus Christ, is there no end to this madness? Have we really opened the door to this type of behavior again? Yes, and we've opened the door, taken the door off the hinges, and burnt the door. My God, Lady B says, if this country goes up in flames, we fucking deserve it. Fuck you, Republicans. Honest to God, fuck you with a rusty fork. Jesus Christ, just, wow. I know. I can't conceive the, you know, I want to do something about the history of homelessness. Tell me about a famous homeless person I can talk about who put himself up by his own bootstraps. Hitler? Hell yeah, Hitler! Come on. And the fact that he had to add as an afterthought, for God's sakes, who didn't make something productive of his life. We're nuts! An all-too-significant portion of the population of this country is knuckin' futz. Gone. As Pink Floyd sings, you know, truly gone fishing. Not coming back. Unredeemable. Uneducable. Hopeless. Lost causes. And they walk among us. And they vote. Lord God, they vote. And again, I know I talk about it all the time. But when you hear a clip from Senator Nicely like that, Lady V, everybody else, don't just think about Senator Nicely. Think about the people who bothered to go and vote in Strawberry Plains, Tennessee, and surrounding environs. Looked at the ballot and said, yeah, that's who I want. And he's an old fart. Probably been there since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. I swear it says more about the people of Strawberry Plains, Tennessee, than it says about Senator Nicely. And the things that it says are not good things. So thank you, Lady B. Thank you. And we'll get out of here. By the way, first class postage, 58 cents for a 1 ounce. 58 cents for a stamp for a 1 ounce certified return receipt, $7.33. So multiply that by at least 1,000. And that means $7,333.33 were spent on that stupid postage. Not this is not about the Postal Service. God love them. They'll mail anything for you. But, wow. West Virginia Right to Work has so much money, they can just throw it away on certified mail. Do you see what a problem that is? Seems like one to me. It's the only thing I've received certified mail from any of these people with a candidate questionnaire. It's disgusting. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors this evening. Thank you so much. We will be at 14:30 tomorrow to finish the week. That's terrifying. 14:30, though. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room this evening. Thanks to Anatole in New Jersey, Nick, and Roger in Oregon, and Squeaky, and Stockton, Larry, and Will, formerly of Chicago. Thank you, Timo, for popping in for the chat room conversation. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is here at Head On .live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now a proud union shop. Please stay safe. I'm going to go online and set up my booster. I swear I'm going to get it. Probably get it tomorrow. Give me the weekend to sort of get over it if there's any after effects. Get your second booster. Let's all get past this nightmare virus. Meantime, wash your hands, don't touch your face, keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet. Like Paul from Parts Unknown says, keep wearing your KN95 or N95 mask. Put mine on for shot day just today. And to go to the grocery store. And of course, if somebody comes stumbling and bumbling and rumbling towards you, talking about how
Hitler pulled himself up from poverty and from homelessness. Well, avoid that strawberry plain idiot like the plague, because he is. And always, China, it's all for you. Later.